Chapter 25. Lesser troops would have given up and accepted their fate in the face of such overwhelming opposition. But the warriors of the Salamanders and Raven Guard were Astartes. So they fought like never before, knowing their doom was at hand, and desiring to make the traitors pay in blood for every one of their number that fell. Caught between two armies, the first wave of the loyalist forces was being systematically massacred. Unrelenting gunfire from the iron warriors at the drop site and the resurgent forces along the Urgal Depression crushed the Salamanders and Raven Guard in a terrifying vice and cut them to pieces in a murderous storm of fire and blood. Warriors of the Alpha Legion and Word-Bearers followed their leaders onto the black plains of Istvan V, their guns blazing and their chainswords bright as they cast off the last remnants of their loyalty to the Emperor and turned their weapons on their brothers. The Dies Irae killed scores with every shot of its mighty weaponry, striding like a giant demon of legend through the benighted slaughter. White-hot fire blossomed amongst the loyalists, and killing flames soared across the black desert, vaporizing men and turning sand to glass. Traitor tanks roared from the Urgal Hills, weapons blazing and crushing the wounded beneath their tracks. The Iron Hands were lost, the fate of their Primarch a mystery as his last known position was overrun by hordes of screaming enemy warriors. Let slip from his false retreat, Angron carved a bloody path through the loyalists, his swords reaping a bloody tally through the ranks of his enemies. The Red Angel fought in a barbaric frenzy, his mind lost to all but the killing rage that drove his blades. His warriors hacked and chopped their foes like butchers, in a killing frenzy of berserk rages, slathering their armour in the blood of the fallen. If the noise of battle had been incredible before, it was deafening now. No voices heard that were not screams of pain or hate. Individual sounds were lost amid the constant roar of gunfire and rumbling explosions, melding into one long, immense howl of murder. What had begun as a battle had become a massacre. Each pocket of loyalist resistance gunned down with overwhelming superiority of fire before the shredded survivors were hacked apart with bloody chainswords. Mortarion harvested loyalists with great sweeps of his scythe, his ragged cloak billowing in the hot winds of the battlefield's fires as the Death Guard crushed their foes beneath the relentless pounding of marching feet and the disciplined volleys of gunfire. At the forefront of the Emperor's children, Lord Commander Eidolon and the swordsman Lucius led a contingent of their warriors into the heart of the enemy, killing with wondrous displays of bladework and howling shrieks of raw, sonic power. The swordsman danced through the battle, his Terran blade carving a screaming, bloody path as he laughed in time with music only he could hear. Marius Verosian and his Orchestra of Damnation ploughed the bloody sand with their terrifying harmonics, ripping open flesh and metal with shrieking chords and howling scales. In contrast, Julius Caesaron took little part in the fighting, expending his energies in the mutilation and defilement of the corpses left in his brother's wake. Trophies of flesh hung from his armour, each violation he wreaked on the flesh of the enemy more extreme than the last. Apothecary Fabius picked his way through the carnage like a vulture, pausing here and there at fallen Astartes to perform some gruesome extraction. A coterie of warriors protected him, and hideous homunculi assisted him in his loathsome labours, the fruits of which were borne behind them in a vile procession of blood-stained organ-bearers. Fulgrim was nowhere to be seen. The magnificent Primarch lost amid the destruction of the Iron Hands Morlocks, but even without him, his warriors fought with savage and exquisite glee. With victory in his grasp, the War Master took to the field of battle, surrounded by Falcus Cibra and his Justerian Terminators. The remnants of Horus's Mournival fought alongside him, the War Master's magnificent black armour and amber chest adornment gleaming bloody in the firelight. The killing fields of Istvan V ran red with the blood of the loyalists, their brave attempt to halt the rebellion of Horus little more than ragged flesh and blood that fought for the last shreds of honour left to them. Here and there, fierce resistance overcame the traitorous forces, and desperate bands of heroes fought their way clear of the trap, dragging their wounded with them towards the few surviving dropships. A band of Raven Guard smashed through a cordon of Emperor's children, who shrieked in orgasmic pleasure as they were cut down, too immersed in the sensations of their own pain and death to fight back. A black-armoured captain led the breakout, fighting his way towards a miraculously undamaged Thunderhawk as his warriors bore the grievously wounded body of their Primarch towards escape. Of Vulcan there was no sign, his warriors cut off and surrounded by the Night Lords and Alpha Legion. Gales of bolter fire hammered the brave warriors of Nocturne and obliterated them. Not all the salamanders were so cruelly slaughtered. Others, following the Raven Guard's example and battling their way to their aircraft and the hope of escape. The few remaining Iron Hands, bereft of their Primarch's leadership, banded together with the Salamanders, and a brave few managed to break out of the hideous massacre, but such successes were the merest fraction of the battle. Within hours, the slaughter was complete, and almost the entire strength of three complete legions lay silent and dead on the tortured sands of Istvan V. The once grey skies of the planet burned orange with the reflected glow of a thousand pyres. The firelight bathed the rippling, glassy sands in a warm radiance, and towering pillars of black smoke from the burning corpses filled the air. Lucius watched the blizzard of ash fall like snow from the skies and stuck out his tongue to taste the greasy ashen tang of the dead. Beside him, Lord Commander Eidolon, the skin of his face stretched and waxen over his bones, watched the cremation of the dead with dull, glassy eyes.
"We need to be moving again soon," said Eidolon. "We have no time to waste with pointless ritual."
Privately, Lucius agreed, but he kept his counsel as the thousands of Astartes, loyal to Horus, filled the broken desert of the Urgal Depression. They gathered before a great reviewing stand, constructed by the dark priests of the Mechanicum with astonishing speed. As the sun began to sink beyond the horizon, the smooth black plains of the stand shone with a blood-red glow. The stand was erected as a series of cylinders of ever-decreasing diameter, one standing atop another. The base was perhaps 1,000 meters in width, constructed as a great grandstand upon which the sons of Horus stood, their preeminent position as the elite of the War Master, in no doubt after this great victory. Each warrior bore a flaming brand, and the firelight cast brilliant reflections upon their armour. Atop this pedestal of flame was another platform, occupied by the senior officers of the Legion. Lucius could see the familiar hulking form of Abaddon, together with Horus Aximand. The others he didn't recognise, but his attention was drawn higher before he could linger on their identities. Above the senior officers of the Sons of Horus stood the Primarchs. Even rendered minuscule by distance, the sheer magnificence of such a gathering of might was breathtaking. 7 beings of monumental power stood on the penultimate tier of the reviewing stand, their armour still stained with the blood of their foes, their cloaks billowing in the winds that swept the Urgal Depression. He had known Angron and Mortarion since the bloody days of Istvan III. Their might had been demonstrated to him time and time again during that campaign. His own Primarch had been a source of inspiration to Lucius for decades, though Fulgrim stood curiously apart from his brothers on the podium, as though disdainful of them. But the others had been unknown to him until now, their power and presence filling the plain before the stand with a hushed awe. Lorgar, of the Word-Bearers, who had only recently arrived, stood proud and tall with his red cloak wrapped around his granite-grey armour like a shroud. Alpharius, resplendent in purple and green, held himself erect as though attempting to match the beings around him in stature. Grim-faced Perturabo stood apart from his brothers, the firelight reflecting red from the burnished plates of his armour and mighty hammer. The lightning-streaked armour of the Night-Haunter seemed darker even than the black podium, his skull-faced helmet a spot of white amid the shadows that wreathed him. Finally, the uppermost tier of the reviewing stand was a tall cylinder of crimson that stood 100 metres above the Primarch's. The War Master stood on top of it, his clawed gauntlets raised in salute. A furred cloak of some great beast hung from his shoulders, and the light of the pyres reflected from the amber eye upon his breastplate. The War Master was illuminated from below by a hidden light source, bathing him in a red glow that gave him the appearance of the statue of a legendary hero, as he stood, looking down on the endless sea of his followers from the towering platform. As the sun finally dipped below the horizon, a flight of assault craft roared over the Urgal hills, their wings dipping in salute to the mighty warrior below. Solid waves of cheering crashed against the reviewing stand, howls of adulation torn from tens of thousands of throats. Lucius found himself swept up in the glory and added his voice to the din, his enhanced senses screaming in pleasure at the sheer deafening volume of the cries. High, screaming voices from the Emperor's children echoed weirdly over the plain, ecstatic shrieks of pleasure and debasement, like nothing that should ever have been given voice by a mortal throat. No sooner had the aircraft passed overhead than the massed Astartes began to march around the reviewing stand, their arms snapping out and hammering their breastplates in salute of the War Master. At some unseen signal, a flame ignited on the northern slopes of the Urgal Depression, and a blazing line of phosphor leapt across the ground in a snaking arc that described the outline of an enormous blazing eye upon the hillside. The adulation soared to new heights as the eye of Horus seared itself into the sands of Istvan V, the War Master's forces roaring themselves hoarse in his praise. Super-heavy tanks fired in salute of Horus, and the towering immensity of the Dies Irae inclined its massive head in a gesture of respect. The ashes of the dead fell like confetti over the War Master's mighty army. Lucius felt a huge surge of purpose fill his heart and made a vow to never once rest in the service of the power Horus represented. Not even death would contain his might. He gripped the hilt of his sword tightly as loudspeakers placed around the desert erupted with sound, the booming, stentorian voice of the War Master sweeping over the Astartes. "My brave warriors," began Horus, "we have achieved much, but there is still more for us to do. With courage, vision, and power, we have defeated those who sought to prevent us from realizing my great dream. But our victory here will count for little if we do not press onwards." Horus punched his clawed gauntlet into the air and shouted, "The road to terror is open. The time has come for us to take the war to the Emperor in his most impregnable fastness. We will make immediate preparation for the invasion of Terra and an assault on the Imperial Palace. Make no mistake, and it will be ours, my brothers. This will be no easy task, for the Emperor and his deluded followers will fight hard to prevent us from interfering with his plans for godhood. Doubtless much blood has yet to be spilled, theirs and our own. But the prize is the galaxy itself." Horus paused as he let the weight of the stakes sink in before bellowing across the fields of Istvan V. "Are you with me?" Lucius joined the cheering as it reached into the firelit skies, and cries of "Hail, Horus! Hail, Horus!" resounded long into the darkness. Within the ruined keep of Istvan V, shadows cast by the funeral pyres were thrown out on the smooth basalt flagstones. Dust motes shaken from the ceiling and walls by the rumble of thrusters hung heavily in the air as the War Master's army took its leave of the fifth planet. Horus watched as yet another squadron of stormbirds lifted off in clouds of dust lit by blue fire, satisfied that all was proceeding as he desired. His brother Primarchs were mustering their forces for the invasion of Imperial space, and he was certain that each and every one understood the need for unquestioning obedience to his orders. As War Master, the armies of the Imperium had been his to control, from the mightiest fleet of battleships to the lowliest army soldier. But to see such martial power gathered in one place was truly inspiring. Not since Ulanor had he witnessed such a gathering of heroes, and his mood soured as he thought once again of the devastated greenskin world and the last time he had seen his father. Time had moved on and revealed much that had been hidden, but still the unease that events were moving too fast for him to control gnawed at the furthest corners of his mind. He turned from the window and poured himself a cup of wine from a brass pitcher he lifted from a nearby table. He drained the wine in a single swallow and poured another, as a rapid knocking sounded at the chamber's entrance. Horus looked up, his mood souring further, as he saw Fulgrim standing in the doorway, a gilt-inlaid box held before him. Once they had shared a brotherhood as close as any. But in the years since they had fought together, something had changed within Fulgrim. His brother had been a warrior of perfection, but now he simply revelled in the sensations of battle and the adrenaline high of ferocious combat instead of the precise application of force. His brother wore his battle armour, the plates gleaming anew once again, as though he had never set foot upon a battlefield. He wore a long cape of fiery golden scales at his shoulders and a mail shirt of glittering silver hung beneath his breastplate. What had once been a magnificent all-enclosing suit of armour now resembled a theatrical costume. "War Master," said Fulgrim. Horus detected a subtle difference in his brother's tone, something so slight that it would have escaped anyone else's notice but his. He lifted his cup and drank a mouthful of wine, beckoning Fulgrim into his chambers. "You requested a private audience with me, Fulgrim," he said. "What is so important that you could not tell me in front of our brothers?" His brother smiled and bowed before opening the box he carried. "My esteemed lord and master of Istvan, I have brought you a trophy." Fulgrim reached into the box and withdrew a grisly prize lifted from the field of battle. Horus felt a momentary shiver of horror as he saw the severed head of Ferus Manus. The flesh was grey and dead, his erstwhile brother's silver eyes plucked from his head and the sockets raw and bloody. His jaw hung open and a splintered nub of bone projected from where his skull had been caved in on one side. Ferus had become an enemy, but to see his flesh violated so brutally was repugnant to Horus, though he was careful to keep his feelings veiled. With a casual flick of the wrist, Fulgrim tossed the bloodied object at Horus's feet. Ferus Manus's head rolled across the black floor and came to rest with the ravaged eye socket staring up at Horus in blind accusation. Horus looked up from the head and turned his gaze on Fulgrim, seeing again the insouciance that had infuriated him so when his brother had returned in failure from his attempt to win over the Primarch of the Iron Hands. As distasteful as it was, he knew he would have to offer congratulations. "Well done, Fulgrim. You have slain one of our greatest foes, as you said you would. But I fail to see why you make this presentation in so private an audience. Surely you would wish our brothers to revel in your triumph." Fulgrim laughed, But there was a timbre to his brother's amusement that sent a chill down Horace's spine as he recalled where he had heard such ancient malice before. In the voice of Sarkel, the entity Erebus had summoned in the heart of the vengeful spirit.
"Fulgrim," asked the War Master, "explain yourself."
The Primarch of the Emperor's Children shook his head and wagged his finger at Horus. "With the greatest respect, mighty Horus, you do not address Fulgrim any more." Horus looked into his brother's dark eyes, seeing beyond the arrogance and superiority to what lay within. Darkness filled his brother's core, an ancient darkness that had torn itself from the womb of a dying race with a bloody birth scream. Its existence was as old as the heavens and as fresh as the dawn. Its life was immortal and its capacity for malice infinite.
"You are not Fulgrim," he breathed, suddenly wary of this intruder in his midst.
"No," agreed the thing with his brother's face.
"Then who are you?" demanded Horus. "A spy? An assassin? If you are here to kill me, then I warn you, I am no weakling like Fulgrim. I will break you before you can lay a hand upon me."
Fulgrim shrugged and tossed the box he carried onto the floor with a clatter. It landed next to Ferus's severed head. Horus let the energized claws of his gauntlet slide out in warning. "Perhaps you can defeat me," said Fulgrim, crossing the room to pour himself a cup of wine. "But I have no wish to test either of us in such a fruitless and wasteful trial of combat. On the contrary, I am here to pledge myself to your cause." Horus glanced towards Fulgrim's waist and relaxed as he saw that this thing, masquerading as his brother, had come before him unarmed. Whatever its purpose in unveiling itself, it had not come with violence on its mind.
"You still have not answered my question," said Horus. "Who or what are you?"
Fulgrim smiled and licked his lips with a long sweep of his tongue. "Who am I? I should have thought that would be obvious to one who has had dealings with other creatures of my ilk." Once again, Horus felt the chill that he had experienced when the Lord of the Shadows had manifested in the stone-walled lodge raised in the heart of his flagship.
"You are a creature of the warp?" he asked.
"I am indeed. What your insufficient language might call a demon. A poor word, but it will have to suffice. I am a humble servant of the Dark Prince, an emissary come to aid you in your little war." Horus felt his anger towards this impudent creature grow with every patronizing syllable that dripped from his lips. It had usurped the body of one of his underlings. The fate of the galaxy was at stake, and it dared to cause such a conflict. Little? The Fulgrim thing turned away from him and paced the length of his chambers as though it had never seen a room quite like it. "I have claimed this mortal shell as my own, and I must admit that it is most pleasing to me. The sensations one experiences when clothed in flesh are quite unique, though I dare say I shall have to make some alterations to its form in time." Horus felt his skin crawl at the idea of such a hideous violation.
"What of Fulgrim? Where is he?"
"Fear not," laughed the warp creature. "We have a long and involved history, Fulgrim and I, and I certainly do not wish him any lasting ill. For some time I have been his conscience, quietly advising him in the lonely watches of the night, advising him, cajoling him, comforting him, and steering his course of action." Horus watched as the demon ran its hands along the sand-blown walls of the chamber, its eyes closing as it enjoyed the rough texture of the stone surface.
"Steering his course of action,"
prompted Horus. "Oh, yes," exclaimed the warp creature. "I made him believe that he should not doubt your course of action. Of course, he resisted, but I can be very persuasive."
"You made Fulgrim join with me?"
"Of course. Did you really think you were that good an orator?" chuckled the demon. "You have me to thank for clouding his perceptions and adding his strength to yours. But for me, he would have run to his emperor screaming of your imminent betrayal."
"And you think I owe you something, is that it?" asked Horus.
"Not at all, for in the end Fulgrim was weak, too weak to finish what his own desire had begun," explained the creature. "His obsession led him to launch the death blow at his brother, but his weakness would not allow him to land it without my help. I merely gave him the strength to do what he wanted to do."
"But where is he now?"
"I've already told you, Horus," cautioned the demon. "Fulgrim's anguish at what he had done proved too great for him to bear. He begged me to help him extinguish his life, but I could not destroy him. That would have been far too prosaic. Instead, I gave him eternal peace, though not, I think, in the way he actually desired it."
"Is Fulgrim dead?" asked Horus. "Answer me, damn you!"
"Oh, no," smiled the demon, tapping an elongated finger with a sharpened nail against his temple. "He is here, inside me, utterly aware of all that transpires, though I do not suppose that he is happy pressed into the furthest reaches of his soul."
"You have already claimed his flesh," snarled Horus, taking a thunderous step towards the demon Fulgrim. "If he is of no more use to you, then let him die."
The demon shook his head with an amused sneer. "No, Horus, I shan't be doing that, for his cries of horror are a great comfort to me. I am unwilling to let him fade away, since our discussions offer me much amusement, and I do not suppose I shall ever tire of them." Horus felt nothing but revulsion at the fate his brother suffered, but forced his disgust to one side. After all, had not the demon already pledged its allegiance to him? It was patently a creature of great power, and to allow the knowledge that their Primarch was as good as dead would certainly cost him the loyalty of the Emperor's Children Legion.
"You may have, Fulgrim, for now," said Horus, "but keep your identity a secret from all others, or I swear I will see you destroyed."
"As you wish, mighty Warmaster," said the demon Fulgrim, nodding and giving an unnecessarily ostentatious bow. "I have no particular desire to reveal myself to others anyway. It will be our secret." Horus nodded, though he made a silent vow to free his brother as soon as he was able, for no one deserved to endure such a terrible fate. But what power could unmake a demon? Orbital space around Isfan V was as busy as any fleeting dock facility around the lunar bases, with the vessels of 8 legions assuming formation prior to transit to the system jump point. Over 3,000 vessels jostled for position above the darkened fifth planet, their holds bursting with warriors sworn to the Warmaster. Tanks and monstrous war machines had been lifted from the planet with incredible efficiency, and an armada greater than any in the history of the Great Crusade assembled to take the fire of war into the very heart of the Imperium. The fleets of Angron, Fulgrim, Mortarion, Lorgar, and the Warmaster's own legion would rendezvous at Mars, now that word had come from Regulus of the planet's fall to Horus's supporters within the Mechanicum. With the manufacturing facilities of Mondus Gamma and Mondus Oculum wrested from the control of the Emperor's forces, the forges of Mars were free to supply the Warmaster's army. The eager warriors of the Alpha Legion were singled out by Horus for a vital mission, one upon which the success of the entire venture could depend. Following the Warmaster's misdirection of Leman Russ, the Space Wolves were known to be operating in the region of Prospero after their attack on Magnus's Thousand Suns. In the nearby system of Chondax, the white scars of Jagatai Khan were sure to have received word of Horus's rebellion and would no doubt attempt to link with the Space Wolves. Horus could not allow such a grave threat to appear, and so the warriors of Alpharius were to seek out and attack these legions before they could join forces. The Night Haunter's fleet had already departed, bound for the planet of Tsagwalsa, a remote world in the eastern fringes that lay shrouded in the shadow of a great asteroid belt. From here, the Night Lord's terror troops would begin a campaign of genocide against the imperial strongholds of Heroldar and Thramas, systems that, if not taken, would leave the flanks of the Warmaster's strike on Terra vulnerable to attack. The Thramas system was of particular importance, as it comprised a number of Mechanicum Forge worlds whose loyalty was still to the Emperor. The ships of the Iron Warriors prepared to make the journey to the Fahl system, where a large fleet of Imperial Fists vessels were known to be regrouping after a failed attempt to reach Istvan V. Though Rogaldorn's warriors had played no part in the massacre, the Warmaster could not allow such a powerful force to remain unmolested. The enmity between bitter Perturabo and proud Dorn was well known, and it was with great relish that the Iron Warriors set off to do battle. With his flanks covered, and the forces that could potentially reinforce the heart of the Imperium soon to be embroiled in war, the gates of Terra were wide open. One by one, the fleets of the Warmaster's Rebellion began the long journey to the planet from which they had begun the Great Crusade. Each legion's ships diminishing to silver specks in the darkness before vanishing utterly. Soon, only the Sons of Horus remained in orbit over Istvan V. From the strategium of the Vengeful Spirit, the Warmaster looked down upon the dark orb through the circular viewing bay above his throne, his expression unreadable as he watched the elliptical curve of the fifth planet recede. He turned as he heard the sound of footfalls behind him and saw Malachurst limping towards him with a data slate in his hand. "What do you bring me, Mal?" asked Horus.
"A communication, my lord," replied his equerry.
"From whom?"
Malagur smiled.
"It's from Magnus the Red."
La Fenice was a ruin. The demon that had claimed Fulgrim's body strode through the wreckage of Bekwakinska's last and greatest performance, smiling as it remembered the scenes of destruction and wanton lust enacted here. The glow of a handful of dim footlights flickered in the gloom. The air stank of blood and lust, and the parquet was sticky with fluid and strewn with bone. The power of its dark prince had poured through the mighty theatre and entered every living thing within it, breaking down the barriers of inhibition between desire and action. Truly it had been a great performance, and the lesser avatars of its master had feasted well on the excess of sensation unleashed before discarding their borrowed flesh and returning to the warp. All around it were the signs that its master's power had been unleashed, the remains of a defiled carcass, a gaudy masterpiece of blood and ordure daubed on the wall, or a sculpture of flesh formed from a multitude of body parts. Outwardly, the demon still resembled the body it had stolen, but already there were hints that the flesh was soon to be reshaped in an image more pleasing to it. An aura of power vibrated the air around it, and its skin held a soft shimmer of inner luminosity. The demon hummed the opening bars of the Marivigilia's overture, and drew the sword sheathed at its waist, the golden hilt shimmering in the fading glow of the wavering footlights. It had retrieved the anathema from Ostian Delafor's studio, surprised and amused to find another body impaled on its lethal point. The shriveled husk of flesh was barely recognisable as Serena Dangerous, but the demon had honoured her corpse with the most sublime ruin before making its way to La Fenice. It held the sword up to its face and laughed as it saw the tortured soul of Fulgrim behind its eyes reflected in the shimmering depths of the blade. The demon could hear his pitiful cries echoing within his skull, the torment in every desperate shriek, the sweetest music. Such things pleased the demon, and it stood for a moment to savour the fruits of its influence on Fulgrim. The fools who served in the Third Legion had no idea that their beloved leader was clawing ineffectually at the bondage in which he was held. Only the swordsman Lucius had appeared to realise that something was amiss, but even he had said nothing. The demon had sensed the burgeoning warp touch upon the warrior and had presented him with the silver blade, within which the lair had bound a fragment of its essence. Though the weapon was now bereft of its spirit, there was still power within the blade, power that would empower Lucius in the years of death to come. The thought of the coming slaughters made the demon smile as it imagined what it might accomplish with this stolen flesh. Sensations that could only be imagined in the warp would be made real in this mortal realm, and a galaxy's worth of blood, lust, anger, fear, rapture, and despair awaited it on the march to terror. A billion souls were at the mercy of the War Master, and with the power of a legion at its command, what heights of sensation might it experience? The demon made its way to the front of the stage and looked up towards the great portrait that hung above the smashed wreckage of the proscenium. Even in the dying light, the portrait's magnificence was palpable. A glorious golden frame held the canvas trapped within its embrace, and the demon smiled as it took in the wondrous perfection of the painting. Where before the image had been a garish riot of colours, with a terrible aspect that horrified those mortals who dared to look upon it, it was now a thing of beauty. Clad in his wondrous armour of purple and gold, Fulgrim was portrayed before the great gates of the Heliopolis, the flaming wings of a great phoenix sweeping up behind him. The firelight of the legendary bird shone upon his armour, each polished plate seeming to shimmer with the heat of the fire, his hair a cascade of gold. The Primarch of the Emperor's children was lovingly portrayed in perfect detail, every nuance of his grandeur and the life that made Fulgrim such a vision of beauty captured in the exquisite brushwork. The demon knew that no finer figure of a warrior had ever existed, or ever would, again. And to even glimpse such a flawless example of the painter's art was to know that wonder still existed in the galaxy. The painted Fulgrim stared down upon the ruin of the theatre and the monster that had claimed his mortal shell. The demon smiled as it saw the horror within his eyes, a horror that had not been rendered by any skill of the painter. Perfect, exquisite agony burned in the portrait's gaze, and as the demon sheathed the anathema and bowed to the silent stage, the dark pools of its painted eyes seemed to follow its every movement. The demon turned from the portrait and made its way from the theatre, as the last of the footlights guttered and died, leaving the last phoenix forever shrouded in darkness. Fulgrim was written by Graham McNeil and read by David Timpson. It was produced by Heavy Entertainment for Black Library. This work is copyrighted by Games Workshop Limited, 2013. All rights reserved.